Hot 91's All Things Property with Direct Collective.
You are Jade from Hot 91 and Mel Kaylee from Direct Collective, where we unpack all of the big real estate questions on our All Things Property extended chat. Today we are talking about what to do when you can't do anything. Now, Mel, this is probably my favourite. I feel like at the moment, this is probably the position a lot of people are in at the moment, where we have a rising property market that has pretty much priced out a lot of people in the last 12 to 18 months. People who might be in a position where they started to save for a deposit, they might have, you know, anywhere up to $20,000 saved, $25,000 saved. They're sitting there going, well, I can keep adding to my deposit. I can keep saving each week. But at the same time, prices of property are going up so much more quicker than what I can save. It's a bit of a dilemma and it's hard to know what to do. And I feel like people want to make a move, but they don't know how to and they don't know what to do. I know it's a massive, complex sort of discussion to sort of unpack, but I want to start the conversation and I do want to start to unpack it because I know this is sort of something that sits a little bit more in your lane. What I'd like to explore is if someone is in that kind of scenario, what is your initial advice for that person? Do they sit there and keep trying to chip away at the savings while prices just race ahead and they get left behind? Or are there some moves that they can make now?
Yeah, it is a very challenging discussion. And a lot of it is because everyone's circumstances are so different. So look, I guess I can provide some insights and some possibilities. But if we unpack first the challenges, my real view is that I speak to people every day and our teams through the different businesses talk to people every day who can actually do more than what they think. And the first issue is we just don't know what we don't know. And that's where, you know, all risk, I've mentioned it before, all risk comes from a lack of knowledge. But it's about where you go to get that information, because in the property space, you can't go, real estate agents aren't trained to give you that sort of advice. And their job essentially is to work for the seller and get the best price for the seller.
Absolutely.
You know? So in essence, against the buyer. Mortgage brokers will look at serviceability and, you know, while they can provide some solutions, it's only in the context of what they know and see and what you present to them and their experience. So there could be multiple other ways to tackle that problem that if you haven't necessarily presented it to them, that they might not be able to help you with. You know, financial planners, you know, their main role is they make money from selling equities effectively, you know, so it's not always the best place to go to help put you on the track, especially in the property market. You don't learn it at school, there's nowhere at uni.
No, so it's no handbook.
Yeah, that's right.
There's Mel Kaylee. That's why we got you.
And there's only one of me.
There's only one of you. We'd clone you if we could, but.
Yeah, so it's then about really seeking out those people who you believe that can help and listening to options. And then, you know, it's just a lot of work. But the first one is to start with a view that, you know, look, maybe there is something, because for most people there are more options. So if we look at the scenario that you particularly mentioned, that's a really good one. So let's just start with first home buyers, for example. Often they think, you know, look, I've got 15, 20 grand. I can't get into the market. And when you talk about, and some people are saying, oh, you know, we'll wait till the market comes back, market's crash.
Don't be waiting.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not coming back.
Yeah, that's right. So A, that's highly unlikely, but B, it's just not true. But what we do is we talk ourselves into things that we want to believe to justify the actions, if you know what I mean, because we don't know what we don't know. So from a first home buyer point of view, when you look at lending, so lenders will lend up to 95% to first home buyers. Some of them, and so when you lend at that high, sorry, I'm going to get a bit technical.
No, that's okay.
You have what's called lender's mortgage insurance.
Yes, okay? You do.
So that's insuring the lender against you defaulting. And that can be quite a big fee.
We're talking like tens of thousands.
Depending on the loan, let's say a $500,000 loan, it could be anywhere from $10,000 to $15,000.
Yeah, it's a decent fee.
Yeah, and so when you think 5%, well, on a $500,000 loan, well, then I need $50,000. Well, no, you'd also need the mortgage insurance as well. Mm. But there are also some lenders who will, what's called capitalise that LMI, right? So they'll put that onto the loan. So essentially,
which you want them to do, right?
Well, as a first home buyer, yes, because you need less. So, yes. So to explain that, if on a $500,000 loan, if you're getting, you know, you get free stamp duties. You've got
there's a couple of exemptions.
First home buyers grant. You know, so you take all those things account, but you've also then got to pay your LMI and your legals. You could still get into a property around $500,000 for about $21,000 in savings.
Mm.
But if you don't have to pay for the LMI, then you only need about $11,000. So if you can then find a property for around $450,000, you only need about $8,500 to get into that property. So you can do it for a smaller deposit. Most people think they can't. They need 20%, or it's just about getting the advice and getting the information as to what is possible. Without the first home buyer's grant, well, you know, that's obviously an extra $15,000 on all of those numbers. But it's still possible to achieve lending at those rates, as long as you've got the serviceability to get up to 95% loans. And that's part of what people have to look at, is their appetite for risk.
And now I've got another, questions are just flying into my head here as you're talking, because, you know, let's just take that scenario of $500,000 investment. You can't get much for that at the moment. So is there a shift in perception? A lot of people want that, you know, four bedroom, double bathroom house with the double lock up garage and stuff like that. Now that reality is pretty much decreased, really. Do we need to reset our realistic sort of expectations on what that can buy? And I guess this branches out into rent vesting, which we've talked about in previous chats on air. Because if someone has got that, you know, $10,000, $20,000 in the bank that they want to invest, you're saying you can. There's ways to do it.
Yep.
Where do they go on the coast to get in? And this is an investment property you're talking about more so, because I don't imagine you can get too much for that $450,000, $500,000, depending on where you want to buy. What are the pros and cons? Is that, I mean, because buying an investment property as your first property is not bad, is it?
No, not at all. And so rent vesting is actually makes more financial sense in the early stages in the property market. And that doesn't mean, you know, you're in your 20s. It could mean in your 40s.
Mm.
It makes more financial sense to build something that is creating greater equity and greater cash flow that will allow you to get into the property you want to get into down the track, because it essentially increases your borrowing capacity. If you're looking at a property, it's not just you trying to afford that mortgage. Now you've got rent to help to pay for that mortgage as well.
Mm. So if someone else is paying off your investment.
That's right. So it's actually can be the smartest move. And if you look online, what you'll find is that it won't necessarily disqualify you from getting the first home buyer's grant down the track for the first home buyers anyway. So the smarter move is to start building equity, start building that cash flow that can then leverage you into property later. But when people start doing that and they start seeing how they can actually start making money, because we're talking the difference between earning money and making money and creating
money. Making your money work for you, yeah.
Yep. So once people start seeing that, then the dream or the romantic notion of I must have my home so I can do my garden and all those sorts of things can disappear or be delayed to a time when that's actually really important
to them.
Be
patient.
Yes.
Be a little bit more patient. So from what I'm understanding, Mel, is that you're sort of saying, look, getting into the market at any kind of level, in those lower levels, if that's what your capacity is to do, do it.
Yeah, and it's about, so there's compromise, right? And so if making money was easy, everyone would do it and we'd all have lots more, right? So part of the reason people don't is because they view property as I wouldn't live there, I wouldn't do that, or how could I live there? But if you're willing to live somewhere, so you know, you grew up in Bedina, for example, and looking for another B suburb, we go, you wouldn't live in Biwa because you feel that's just on the wrong side of the Bruce Highway.
Mm.
That's not a financial decision, you know, and there's nothing wrong with that decision. You've got to understand that's not financially sound. But just because you wouldn't live there wouldn't mean that someone else doesn't.
Absolutely.
Right? And so, and that whole view about it's got to have four bedrooms, you know, four garages.
Yeah.
All of those things, the 4-2-2-2-2s.
Yeah.
That's not a good investment. So there's this great bit of literature out there, Jade, called the Sunshine Coast Property Market Update that actually talks about where the real demand is.
Is this yours?
Yes.
I love it.
But it actually drills down to identify where the demand is now, where it is into the future, and that's where the opportunity actually exists. And it is in smaller properties. It is in properties for 1 to 2 person households that are more affordable. And again, it's not that you have to live there. It's about how can I maximize my return? And that's how we have to make that shift in thinking towards rent vesting and property as a financial vehicle or financial asset versus somewhere I'm going to live.
Oh, I love it. You know what? I want to branch out into something else here. Another potential scenario, and I know it's such an old-fashioned thing. I don't even know if it exists anymore. I'm going to ask the question. But back in the day, you know, probably more my mum and dad's generation, if they wanted to get a home loan, my grandfather would go guarantor for them at the bank. He would go to the bank manager and say, this is my daughter and, you know, we're going to guarantor the loan for her to get a loan. Does that still exist? Is that an option for people in this scenario?
Yeah, look, we still see people securing property using other people on the lending that aren't on the property per se. You know, so they're guaranteeing the loan from a serviceability point of view or an equity point of view. So what we're talking about there is what we like to call the family and friends bank, the FF bank.
Okay.
So it's about leveraging opportunity and with others. Because if you can't do it yourself, and this is one of the things, even coming back to the start, is what do I do if I can't do anything?
Yes,
what can you do with others?
Yes.
You know, what else is there in the family? Now, the first caution I'd give you is that a very senior person in a bank once told me the number one people go broke is due to partnerships. You know, and if you think about how many marriages fail because of money issues. You know, so when you're talking about money and when you're talking about doing it with other people, the first one is make sure you know who you're doing it with, because even if you think you do, money can change things. So, if you've got solid relationships, if you've got solid friendships, if you've got solid, you know, family members and they have the capacity and the desire to help you, then that's a really great solution. You know, a couple of families coming together to build investment property that, you know, over a few years creates equity and cash flow that they can then either sell and separate or leverage together to go on and do more. Using family as you said, as guarantors and or even just from a servicing point of view. So you've just got to have the rule book set up. No different to a company. It's got a shareholder agreement, a constitution, you know. So make sure the rule book's set up. Make sure you've chosen those people wisely. But it's a really great way to get yourself into the property market and to start that journey if you can't do it on your own.
And so what would the first steps be in terms of that? Would it be going off to the bank together or going to see a solicitor to draw up some sort of agreement? Or what's the first step if you want to do the family and friends? Let's just say someone's thinking, yes, I want to go and buy a property with my sister and her husband. First step would be?
Was have that conversation with them and talk about your
deal
breakers.
Yeah, make sure they're agreeing too. Not a bad idea.
But look, both are concurrent. And it really comes down to those personal circumstances. You know, the key is someone going to lend to us and what would that look like? Okay, so lending environment is fluid, and a lender who might look at that one day might not the next, but there might be someone else in their place. So it's about speaking to a broker or, you know, your bank and understanding what that looks like and then what the requirements are, and then from there you then need to work on what that rule book looks like. And if that means going to a solicitor, then go to a solicitor. If it means something that you can draw up between you, you know, that's not something that I would be willing to give advice on myself.
Exactly. Oh look, they can come to you for all things property anyway. Look Mel, love exploring this one. I think it's very relevant at the moment. I think there are a lot of people out there wanting to make moves feeling like they can't. It's been amazing talking to you about this topic, and I think it's very inspirational. I think there's lots of opportunity for people. And if you want more information, go and see Mel. Mel and the team at Direct Collective, they'll know what to do. If you've got a question or you want to know something from Mel, make sure you get in touch with us. He's at our disposal. We can ask him anything that you might want to know about buying real estate, data, anything about that. He is the man. Get in touch with us. Mel, so good to have you on today.
Thanks for having me, Jad.
For more on Hot 91's All Things Property with Direct Collective, head to hot91.com.au.